welcome back, and thank you for tuning in today. This is Henrik Palmgren from Götaland in Sweden. I hope you're having a good day and enjoying spring if you're in the Northern Hemisphere. Finally, some warmer and longer days ahead, much needed. If you're new to the program, I can let you know that you can download or stream new Red Eyes Radio programs 3 times per week. And usually every other Wednesday, one of these shows is Radio 314 with Lana. But sometimes we do a bit more of those, a bit more often. So keep an eye on the websites for all the latest shows. You can, of course, subscribe to our RSS feeds as well to get the latest right to your doorstep, as it were. RedEyesCreations.com is the main website, where we also have a busy news feed updated frequently as well. And for members who want a full broadcast and access to all our additional video material and commentaries and such, RedEyesMembers.com is where we have our entire archives. Today we have Catherine Austin Fitz back on the program. She is the founder and president of Solari. She served as managing director and member of the board of directors of the Wall Street investment bank Dillon Reed & Company. She also served as assistant secretary of housing, federal housing commissioner at Housing and Urban Development in the first Bush administration, and was the president and founder of Hamilton Securities Group. Today we're going to talk about the Secret Space Program and Breakaway Civilization, following the trail of the black budgets, the funneling of money into secretive technologies developments, and if this actually goes to develop a space program that is highly classified and largely unknown. We are also going to talk about the upcoming conference in San Mateo, California, on this very same topic, June 28th and 29th. And I'm going to be hosting that one as well, so that'll be a lot of fun. So we'll provide a bit more information about this during this program, but also on our websites ahead here. We don't have all the details up as of yet, but they will be there, so keep an eye on the websites. All right, let's get started. Welcome back, Catherine. Many years ago since we last spoke, thank you for coming back. It's great to talk with you. And how have you been, Catherine?
Oh, I've been fine. It's great to be back. I love your show.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, last time you were with us, we primarily talked about the financial system overall, the markets, the initial steps, I believe, really, of the crash that were starting to unfold at that point. And I know that you've gone through so many revisions, if you will, as well, of your work. And I'm very curious to know what you've been up to pretty much since we last spoke, and the way that you've connected your previous work with the economy, with the financial markets, to, you know, things like the black budget, new technologies. And when did you get onto this trail? I know you've done some talk with Joseph Farrell as well, correct?
Right. Well, my pathway has been pretty simple. I was working in Washington in the 1990s and realized that there was essentially a financial coup d'etat happening. And I decided that I wanted no part of it and would try and warn people, and came to the conclusion that after many years that it was not information that most people could fathom. And so I focused on starting businesses that would help my subscribers and clients, you know, sort of face it, deal with it, navigate it. And so I sort of felt the more people you can protect from this, the better off. And of course, then the financial coup ended in the bailouts, the period when you and I spoke, really sort of finished cleaning up the fraudulent paper from that process. And now what you're seeing is the money that's been shifted is now being reinvested, and we're going to a whole new phase of what's happening. And so I continue to work. You know, I have, I'm a small business person, and I have 3 businesses, one which publishes the Solari Report, which is a subscription service designed to help people navigate the environment with a particular focus on their assets and finances. And then I have a company, Solari Investment Advisory Services, where I do consulting services for investment strategy. And then I manage money through Celine Advisory with a partner. So day to day, I'm simply helping people try and make the shift along with the rest of society. And it's I would say my goals are much more modest than when I left Washington deciding I'm going to help stop the financial coup d'etat. Anyway, one of the things that I came to in this process was a conclusion that the financial system is really organized to harvest the entire sort of economic output of the globe. Think of the entire global economy is sending a tithe into something I call the black budget. And I finally realized it was absolutely critical as a society that we look at where this money is going. And of course, that, as you know, because you do a lot of coverage of this on Red Ice Radio, that takes you down a pathway of looking into secret projects, secret technology, what in the world is going on in space around us, you know, what is happening on other planets, et cetera. And in the course of looking at those topics, I've found a series of researchers and intellectuals who I think are leaders in this area. One, of course, is Dr. Joseph Farrell. Another is Richard Dolan. Joseph does a Solari report every quarter on the Solari report, where we track the sort of the comings and goings of what's called the breakaway civilization, the people leading this harvest, if you will. And then Richard Dolan was just on the Solari report. And in fact, we published that publicly. It was a discussion of his most recent book, which is called UFOs for the 21st Century Mind. It's a fresh look at the whole topic of what are UFOs and what does it mean to us. And as you know, we're all coming together in a conference in June out in south of San Francisco in Silicon Valley to talk about the program is called the Secret Space Conference and the Breakaway Civilization. And so it's really a chance for all of us to get together and address what I think is the most important topic of our time, which is what is the governance system on planet Earth? You know, who's running things and why are they behaving the way they're behaving? And I don't think we have yet to have a clear picture of that. I think of Red S Radio as one of the leaders in trying to put the pieces of the puzzle together. But I find there's something magical when we can come together in person. So I'm very excited about the opportunity to do it, because this is a small group of very serious people who bring an awful lot to the table. And the people who are organizing and sponsoring the conference are the group that's done the Global BEM Conference. I guess you were with the first one they did in 2011 in Holland.
Yeah, that's right. In Amsterdam, that's right. Jeroen and the rest of the team there. Yeah, that was a great conference, by the way.
Aren't they fabulous people?
Yeah, I love them all. Everyone we met was a great team there. And I think we have a lot of the uh-huh. same folks there now, I think, this year. So that's going to be great. Yeah.
Yeah. What was the 2011 event like?
Oh, it was just really interesting, because it was a wide dispersal of the audience as well. You know, people from all walks of life and everything, and some really good presentations as always. And I think so we have some returns, like Richard Dolan was there, but there are a couple uh-huh. other new names as well. You know, but yeah, I really enjoyed it. We made a TV show out of some of the guests and some of the attendees there as well, so people can look at that to get a little bit of a feel of how things were there. But yeah, exactly. I'm really looking forward to that. So that's going to be in June 28th to and the 29th in San Mateo. And the website, I believe, is actually up now, so people can go and check that out right away at secretspaceprogram.org for all the speakers and everything.
And they put together the Breakthrough Energy Conference in Holland in 2012, which was the first one I went to. And then again last year in Boulder, which I had the opportunity to attend. Richard Dolan was there. And then, I think of these as the follow-up, because I think one of the reasons to do the Breakthrough Energy is, of course, when you explore the topic of what is the energy technology available, it always backs you into the question of who in the world is flying around in these UFOs.
Exactly.
Because clearly somebody's got the technology. And so the two topics are very much part of, you know, they're sort of flip sides of the same coin.
Exactly.
So it's not surprising that the Secret Space Program Conference led to 2 years on Breakthrough Energy, led back to Secret Space Program.
Exactly. No, you're absolutely right. They go hand in hand. And there's a bunch of things, obviously, that we could get into here, and we're going to get there. We're going to give out some more details later about the conference and everything. But how much would you say that we actually, and this is, of course, the most difficult question of them all. I'm going to pose that first, and then we can talk about the details. But how much do we actually know about the breakaway civilization? At what stage this is in? And because to me, it is a lot of, I mean, you have to piece together the puzzle in such a way that you kind of, you try to draw in the missing pieces, right? And you can kind of tell, all right, that probably is going on. This is some, you know, an interesting aspect over here. But how much do we actually know, do you think?
Well, I think we know very little, but I also think that we can fill in. It's a little bit like those paint by number painting sets. I think you can fill in a lot of the different aspects of what's going on. Part of the challenge has been that the knowledge that you need to understand the breakaway civilization and to follow them is very bifurcated. So it's spread out into lots of different worlds and expertise, and pulling it together and integrating it is an enormous intellectual challenge. And I think part of that is you need to also understand history, because there's a very deep history to what's happening here. And sorting out the history of what's true and what's disinformation can be, as you know, very time consuming. So yeah. I think there's a great deal that we don't know. What we do know is that there is a lot of information if enough of us come together and integrate. But we can also, because of the impact of the breakaway civilization on the money, if you, money is a wonderful tool because it lends itself to mathematics.
Yeah.
if $2 disappears on the left, it's likely to pop out someplace on the right.
Right. Yeah.
So I think that's one of the benefits of following the money, because by mapping out and estimating the money, you can see a lot of their footprint.
How about this idea that the economic system, though, is so based on such a hot air balloon, on nothing, basically, that it becomes increasingly more difficult to actually trace it? I mean, after all, they do print the money, right? And so there's that very aspect that they would, bookkeep everything, if you will. Is that also a part of it? Or is it just that we have to look, as you've been doing, in the black of, the unofficial budgets to actually get an idea of where the money really is going?
Well, clearly there's more and more money disappearing into what's called shadow banking systems, and the governmental and other public statistics on what's happening economically are moving further and further away from what is actually, what the reality is. So it's getting harder and harder in that sense to track the what we call the sort of covert cash flows. At the same time, the internet and modern communications is allowing more and more of us to communicate, in an atmosphere where we say, we don't believe the official story. And it was very interesting. I don't know if you saw this during the disappearance of Malaysia 370 happened. You had an enormous number of people jump on Reddit, and the best coverage of Malaysia 370 was on Reddit, and it was just citizens jumping together, collecting facts, sorting through things, and it was a much more responsible conversation than many other areas, whether in the corporate media or the alternative media.
Yeah.
And it was simply citizens who realized it was a complete waste of their time to spend any time with the corporate media. Rather, they needed to get together and start figuring it out. So I think the shift in perception has made an enormous difference with people being able to identify and map out, because to the extent that what the breakaway is doing has a footprint in concrete reality, trucks move down the road, trains move across the country, planes move across the sky. If you're moving material goods around in the physical world, people see it. If you ever go to a truck stop, I don't know if you've ever spent any time in a truck stop in the United States. It is amazing if you get stuck in a truck storm during a snowstorm and start to talk to the truckers, because they're watching everything move around. It's amazing what they know.
Right.
Because they're just seeing the flow of goods and services. And so there's a lot you can see in the material footprint.
Now, before we get deeper into this, as far as you're aware, are there any people like the truckers but are part of the bigger program here in this regard? And that's what I was wondering about, like how many actually know stuff, but they don't talk about it necessarily. They don't might not be under a non-disclosure agreement or anything like that. It's just that they might not even fully know what they're transporting or, kind of what they're part of. Are those people out there, do you think?
I see pockets. So you will have pockets of groups. So the truckers is an example. You have a close-knit group of people. a lot of truckers were small farmers who were targeted and sort of played by the government. So they, many of them were in the military. So between the military and the farming experience, they have a pretty savvy idea of what's going on. They communicate well, they stick with each other, and so they share knowledge. And there are communities within that that, you know, will have a very clear picture of reality, but know how to sort of toggle back and forth between reality and official reality. So if they think you're, you know, a certain kind of person, they'll talk to you, you know, completely in the official reality. If they see you're one of them in certain respects, they'll talk to you in the other reality.
Right.
So it's you know, so that's a pocket. You'll see certain kinds of minority groups who will, you know, so for years you had certain kinds of minority or immigrant groups who come in. They're the janitors, they're the cleaning ladies in the process. They see and hear almost everything. I used to get incredible amounts of knowledge from those groups about extraordinary numbers of things. You know, they often do the, say, the government contracting. They're in the government contracting offices. And what they do is they will collect and pool intelligence. They, you know, they almost run their own private intelligence operations. Then, of course, you've got the secret societies who are very, very good at sort of doing the same thing, particularly for a focus in a place. So you'll come into a Mason's temple in a place, and their intelligence about what's going on in that place and how it's how it relates to the covert cash flows is extraordinary. And in a sense, it's the local guys who are day to day running the drug and many of the covert operations in that place. So they're pockets, you know, but those pockets are very hidden away. If you come into them as a foreigner, a stranger, you know, if you're from outside that state or outside that county, you're never going to be allowed in, and you won't know that they have that knowledge.
Right. Yeah.
It's a parallel universe.
Exactly. Exactly. And you mentioned the history as well of this, that a lot of people are, you know, not aware of this. How would you, if you could piece together a little bit of a chronology for us, if you will, how would you put the dates and the events on this thing of and kind of leading us up a little bit to where we are today when it comes to the breakaway civilization, that program?
Well, I would start everything in 1947. You had the United States at the end of World War II basically commanded 50% of the global resources with 6% of the population. And the first thing they said was, you know, they took a look at the numbers and said, this can't last. So, you know, we're going to a world where we're going to be 6% of the people with 6% of the resources. How do we extract the resources we need to stay in the lead, you know, come what may, when the global economy is balanced as it is, you know, as it has been for the last, particularly the last 10 to 15 years. So, the first thing that happened was we passed the 47 Act and then the 49 Act. And those two acts in the United States created a mechanism that would allow Congress to appropriate money and then the intelligence agencies to pull that money out for secret projects. Now, that money was then levered with something called the Exchange Stabilization Fund, which was created in 1934. It's essentially an official slush fund managed for the Secretary of the Treasury by the New York Fed. So it's controlled by a private bank, but it plays and trades with a federal credit. You know, in addition, the history on that is you have the banks running the Exchange Stabilization Fund, who are also the depository for the U.S. government. So you created a mechanism where the federal credit can be used, both appropriations and credit and leverage and trading, by private bankers. You know, they're using the federal balance sheet, but they're private bankers and they're not subject to the similar kinds of government disclosure and FOIA. And then finally, you added to that provisions through executive orders that allowed you to spend all of that money on private corporations controlling the most powerful secret technology in the world. And so you created a funding mechanism that would allow you to do you know, incredibly powerful secret technology with sort of an infinite amount of government money and behind, you know, behind a cloud of secrecy, no transparency to government. There's a wonderful story in Michael Sala's new book, which I had not read until recently. Eisenhower was the president who, after Truman created the national security state with the 47-49 Act, Eisenhower was the guy who stood up and warned about the military-industrial complex. And this is exactly, you know, the sort of secret infrastructure financing big corporations was what he was warning people against. And during his administration, he had authorized the CIA to provide security. He had authorized the creation of Area 51, and then he had authorized the CIA to provide security. And what he discovered was that he was being cut out of the loop. So they weren't telling him what was going on at Area 51. And he finally got very, very frustrated and informed them if he didn't get a report in his office right away, he was going up to Colorado, getting the First Army and invading Area 51.
Really? Jeez. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's an amazing story, and I will bet you any amount of money it's true. And I think one of the things that happened was one of the things that got Kennedy killed was, you know, having been fully briefed by Eisenhower is what we believe happened. You know, he did not have, having not been a general, having not been the general who won World War II, he didn't have the political clout to go up to Colorado, get the First Army, and invade Area 51. And what was literally happening was you had the most powerful corporations in the world who had found a way to get an infinite amount of government financing off the books and with it control the most powerful technology in the world. And with that, you had both the government finances and secret technology go out of control. And with that, you had the beginnings of the breakaway civilization. And then what happened in the 80s, now remember, we have private corporations with infinite government financing building these secret projects. In the 80s and 90s, we had an explosion of financial fraud, which I believe was not fraud. You know, fraud and incompetence was a cover story. I believe right. What you had was a financial coup d'etat. And my estimate, if you look at our annual wrap-up that we published in January, we did a roll-up and basically said, look, if you count up all the money that disappeared from the early 1990s until the bailouts, that's basically $40 trillion. We laid out all the different sort of, you know, $4 trillion missing from the federal government, the pump and dump of the stock markets, the various bailouts, quantitative easing. And so I estimate that literally $40 trillion got shifted out of North America. That's not counting what may have gotten shifted out of the developed world in Europe.
Right.
And when you take those pots of money, essentially what you're saying is a decision was made as a society, rather than pay for nursing homes, we're going to take the money and we're going to build a new high-tech civilization, including doing what I believe is tremendous amounts of things in space. Another way to look at that money is to say, okay, you know, if I stole $40 trillion, put it in endowment, I would have enough money, you know, at a 5% interest to finance a world government on a private basis.
Exactly. Good point.
Really? No, yeah. Really? Yeah. Right. So to me, what you're watching is the leverage buyout of the planet. Or another way to say it is you're looking at the reengineering of the global governance system.
Yeah.
And that's why I keep coming back. You know, before we talk about solutions, we need to talk about, well, who's really running this and why are they behaving the way they're behaving? I'll give you a perfect example. You know, for many years, I tried to document money that was going missing from the federal government between fiscal 1998 and fiscal 2002, $4 trillion went missing. I'm sure you remember
the day before
9/11, Don Rumsfeld stood up and admitted that $2.3 trillion had gone missing at the Department of Defense the year before, which is more than all the taxes that Americans, individual Americans paid that year, was certainly much more than the Department of Defense's appropriations. It's like you losing 100% of your budget for the year.
Jeez. Yeah, I know.
So
didn't Rumsfeld try to recover from that later? I think it was a later interview and he said, oh, it was just an accounting mistake. They were accounted for or something like that. Did you hear that?
Well, imagine this. Imagine if your bank said, you know, Mr. Pogrom, we're missing, you know, we're missing more than 100% of your revenues for, you know, we're missing more than 1 year income from your bank account. But don't worry, just write something that says an undocumentable adjustment, and it's really just an accounting problem, and don't worry about it.
Right.
You know, you would. This is kind of nuts. Yeah. Anyway, so there's no, you know, one under the United States Constitution is required under the Constitution by law that no money be spent unless it's accounted for in a appropriation. So if you have undocumentable adjustments and you can't prove where that money went and that it was spent in a, you know, in accordance with an appropriation, you're outside the law.
Right.
Okay, and make no mistake about it. If you're a private corporation or a state and local government, you're operating outside the law. Your banks will not do transactions for you. The stock exchange will shut you down. This is very serious business. Okay, so I was very worried about all the money that was going missing. And I'll never forget when I first saw the documentary on the Phoenix Lights, which was about a giant UFO that floated down the side of Arizona. I think it was in 1996. And it was so obvious, so documented, so photographed. So many people saw it. In fact, that the governor had to have a press conference to try and poo-poo it. But I'll never forget seeing the first films of that giant thing, whatever it was, and saying, oh, that's where the $4 trillion went. I bet you Lockheed Martin would charge $4 trillion to build that.
Yeah.
You know, but you, and that's why when people talk about, I'll never forget when I first saw my first group of UFOs in the sky, you know, the first thing that occurred to me was, wait a minute, how much money would it cost to build those? You know, how much money does it cost to have something that has free energy and has anti-fields, you know, propulsion and anti-gravity, and, you know, how much would that, if a jet fighter costs $65 million, could we build that for $650 million? And then I started to, you know, count it all up and say, well, wait a minute, is there any connection between that and all the money that keeps disappearing? You know,
yeah.
And yeah, I mean, everything in this universe at some point, you know, can be brought down to the mathematics of time and money, whether, you know, whether it was made here or it was made someplace else. So either it's coming from someplace else or it was made here. And if it was made here, then the question is, where's the industrial and manufacturing base that can produce it? And who's paying for it? And who owns it? And who's getting the financial benefit of it?
Yeah.
Because I assure you, if you, you know, and this comes back to the currency wars, for 10 years, I've been asked regularly on radio and television, is the dollar going to collapse? And I say, no, it's not. And the reason I say, no, it's not, is if you look at the covert technology and weaponry available to support the dollar, it's significant. And we can go into that. But I assure you, whoever is running around in those UFOs and has that technology are the people who, if they want to, can control the reserve currency. You know, so it's a financial issue as to what the UFOs are and who controls them.
Very interesting. Now, of course, one of the questions is kind of more obvious here. The question is, though, if money is everything, if money can buy you anything, there is the means of the resources, of course, the technology to develop the technology, if you will. But of course, the key here is the ideas, right? The science, the knowledge of how to actually do this. And can anything be appropriated with aid of money, or where have they gotten this from?
Well, money cannot buy everything. If you don't have the intellectual capital, you know, then you can throw money at something all day long, and it doesn't mean you can create it.
Kind of like government does overall, you know.
Right. So one of the questions is all of this technology something we developed, or is it something someone else developed and we've reverse engineered it to figure it out ourselves? No. There's, you know, you and I could talk about that forever, and there's no way to know the truth. But I do think what I've found on planet Earth is that sort of the system is not run to maximize financial goals, but the financial system is used to achieve control and management. So the financial system is much more a way to allocate resources, to settle wars among each other, to compete and to cooperate. And so it's much more of a allocation system and an incentive system as opposed to a market system. You know, people are always complaining about capitalism, and I'm always saying, well, you know, I think it might work, but we ought to try it.
Exactly.
This
absolutely.
This is not capitalism.
No, exactly. That, I don't understand why people do not understand that fact. When all you have to do is just look around at all the wheelings and dealings of government and involvement, and even the ludicrous idea that the free market is being blamed for any of this, you know. So, wake up.
What market?
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I think the important thing to understand is, if anything, control does not work. Money is very useful for control, but control does not work through money. It works through force. And force is a much, for the person wanting to control, force is a much more economic way of controlling.
Yeah.
And what's so important about the control system on planet Earth right now is the people who are in control have the ability to kill with impunity, and they have the ability to do it invisibly and get away with it. And that's what's got everybody so scared. They cannot see the system that they're dealing with, and they cannot see the enemy. They don't know how to protect against them because they can't see them. So it's very, very scary.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And just this idea, again, that you mentioned, to keep people down, to keep people fighting amongst themselves as of course, they're running this completely other set of, you know, value system and an objective, if you will, an agenda, which is completely foreign to most people. They don't even know that it exists. But what do you think that, you know, just to stick something else into that kind of concept there, that we see some kind of development of the private space program among all of these things? You know, we have Branson trying to get up there. We have Jeff Bezos, or whatever his name is, from Amazon, with this blue star or whatever it's called. There's a couple of those. They're kind of getting into that a little bit. Is that anything that could actually aid in the process of revealing something more of what actually is going on up there, if some of these private guys manage to get up there? What do you think?
Well, I think a decision has been made to essentially privatize the space program. So, you know, it's going to be a public-private venture, but the laws and regulations have been changed somewhat to encourage private development. And that brings with it many questions that, you know, I think there are advantages of doing it privately and disadvantages as well. It brings with it questions of, you know, who's going to own a planet? Who's going to own space? How's this supposed to work?
Yeah.
We really don't have a legal infrastructure or a concept for space. But I don't think the private companies doing this are necessarily all bad. To me, the important thing is the human race get out there and start participating in space. You know, we really thought during the Kennedy administration that we had begun to move into space and it was going to continue, you know, that man was going to travel the stars. And it was the human destiny to participate and travel the universe and explore the universe. And so the fact that somehow stopped was, I think, very, along with sort of all the assassinations in the 60s, was very dampening for the human spirit. So
right.
I, for one, would love to see a space program really grow, and the nuts and bolts of how it's done. You know, I think a public-private construct is going to be a good one. Whatever it takes to get out there and get out in space, I think we ought to just go do it.
Exactly. I agree. I mean, wonder even how far we could get with well, imagine a space program that's crowdfunded. I mean, that would be, of course, antithetical to the very idea, right? Because the NASA budget, the European space program and everything else, they're already taking money in taxes from people. And, of course, there's much more to it than you've just revealed here. But nonetheless, it's like we have a system in place now that's supposed to fulfill these tasks, but they obviously are not doing it. So people above that have to try to achieve it even more. I mean, we're in such a bad state. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Well, I think one of the reasons you're seeing centralization of wealth into a relatively small number of people, so the number of billionaires growing, is in fact so you can concentrate capital and you can do these kinds of projects.
Yeah.
So I think there's a real perception by the leadership that they want to be able to do that, and the concentration of capital to do that is part of what we're watching. What's interesting is if you look at the people who've engineered the financial coup, one of the things they clearly want to do is make great investments in space. And they're moving to do that. There's a lot of effort being made to encourage young people to get interested in space, the technology that can help us do that, or the technology that can come from our efforts doing that and what it can do here on planet Earth. You're seeing, I believe, a lot of technology sort of shifted out of the secret projects and sort of into the mainstream. And I think we're going to see a real explosion of technology coming out of the black budget to try and help rebuild a manufacturing and industrial infrastructure that can support a major space program. So what I think is happening is you're seeing the people who engineered the coup trying to rebuild alignments with the wider population through the popularity of going into space.
Really?
Huh. Yeah. So I think they very rightly perceive that if they're ever going to get general support from the population, it's going to be around mankind's dream of going into space and traveling space, and that they can build support. I think one of the reasons they've been so supportive of people like Elon Musk is because he captures that popular imagination. Bezos, Musk, these guys can get, you know, a new generation of young people saying, yeah, let's go to space. Let's do it. So it wouldn't surprise me to see a real effort to build alignment between the breakaway civilization and the general population over that.
So is it some kind of, they're trying to patch up a pretty bad relationship here, or what is this about really? Or do they need our help? Is that what you're trying to say?
I would say it a little bit differently. You, and this is going to sound a bit gruesome, but you come in, you steal the parents' money, the kids no longer have an inheritance, you show up with, you hire their best friend, you show up, you have the best friend show up and say, hey, I have a real neat opportunity. They don't realize that their new crowdfunded startup is being financed with what was their inheritance that was stolen from their parents. You know, they go back to their parents' house on Thanksgiving and tell them, oh, guess what? The American dream lives.
Hmm.
You see what I mean?
Right, right. So there is a conscience here.
Well, what you're seeing is a leadership who needs support from the general population in a variety of ways. So they need capital, so they steal the capital, but then they dribble a little bit back in a way that wins them the support of the most talented people whose skills they most use.
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting. They can
best use.
Right. Yeah, exactly, because that's kind of what I was wondering about, you know, at what level they, as you said, because, I mean, they need to bring new, you know, young blood into this so that people are excited about it, and the fact that they can glean ideas, obviously, from new and younger people that are coming into it as well, who has a fresh set of eyes and looking at problems in a different way, because to me, it feels that they wouldn't be able to solve all the issues on their own, really. But, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure.
Here's the thing. My guess is they're taking a lot of the technology that they've developed in the black budget, and they're turning around, and this is one of the reasons they're allowing a lot of new fabrication technology, a lot of new materials technology. So on the asset side of the balance sheet, they're letting a lot of the technology come out. On the other side of the balance sheet, they're saying, okay, let's let crowdfunding, let's kick up venture capital, let's kick up IPOs. And what that is saying to the most talented of the business community and the young people is they're saying to the entrepreneurs, okay, build us an industrial infrastructure that can produce far more stuff at a much lower cost. Because we're ready. If you look at the industrial infrastructure of this country, a lot of it was built to produce cost-plus materials for the defense budget. And cost-plus had its purpose, you know, 20 years ago, but now, with new technology and new tools, you can produce far more with far fewer people. You don't, cost plus no longer works. So you need to change how you're doing the defense budget. You need to get it on a much more profitable basis. And you need to be able to produce far more at far lower costs, which you can if you re-engineer from cost plus and you integrate all these other things that we're talking about. So I think they're looking to radically improve the industrial base that will allow them to go into space,
right,
among other things.
Right, right.
Now, what that also does is that also brings a lot back. I think the experiment with outsourcing everything to Asia was, you know, had very mixed results. And what they're discovering is with this kind of new technology, we don't need, you know, we can do everything on a with robots. We can do everything automated. We don't need to send it to China, and we're tired of dealing with those issues, whether it's transportation or, you know, national security issues. So, so they see a way to rebuild their industrial infrastructure here, or in the developed world, and make it much, much more powerful. It's interesting. I was just watching a video a couple months ago called Engineering Empire, and it was about the engineering process used by various empires to really build themselves up. And it talks about how the Carthaginians went on a crash building program to try and hold the Romans off.
Right. Yeah.
and it was amazing. I was watching this and I was thought, this looks exactly like the re-engineering of the North American industrial base. You know, this is Carthage trying to cope with Rome.
Right.
It was remarkable. It was like watching, you know, that's why we need to study history, because there is nothing new under the sun.
So Catherine, remind us again. So who's Carthage and who's Rome in this situation? Is it them and us in that kind of scenario? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, here's the question. In this kind of scenario, is the reason we're on this crash course because we're worried about Romans? Who are the Romans?
Yeah.
You know, are there other civilizations moving in on us? Is that what this is about? I'll never forget.
Right.
There was a period, if you've ever studied the Iran-Contra fraud, there was a period in the early 80s where the fraud exploded. I mean, it just exploded. And if you talk to any of the intelligence officers who engineered the fraud, what they would say is, well, you know, we needed 20 million and we did it and we got away with it. And people would, you know, kind of let us get away with it. And it was too complicated. They couldn't really get us. And so we did 50 and then we did 100 million and we couldn't believe it. So we just kept going and we never believed how much money we got. And it, you know, they described this process of financial fraud and how it grew from, you know, 20 million to, I think at the end it was about, I don't know, it's about 500, it's about $500 billion, I think, that ultimately the RTC cost. But it was enormous how it exploded. And it started just in the early 80s. And I'll never forget watching a video of Norm Berglund, who wrote The Rings of Saturn, being interviewed, and about how when the Voyager went out and passed Saturn, they saw these huge plasma, or what they believed were huge spaceships, docked in the rings of Saturn, and they believed that they were getting energy. It was like they were fueling up in the rings.
Right.
And these were spaceships. I think one was 20,000 or 50,000 or 70,000 miles wide. And of course, being made of plasma, they're organic. They can keep growing. And I thought, well, you know, I wonder if that's what happened. If you know, when the Voyager sent the photos back, they just got so scared. It was kind of like they lost their mind and did whatever they had to do to get the money they needed to start financing these crash programs.
Right. Okay. So that's a good kind of preface to make here in that regard of telling that there might be something else that happened along the way also, right? There might be a completely different incentive. There's two different scenarios here, right? One is that they simply just want to get off world. They want to build something else or go somewhere else, you know, Earth 2.0, what have you, or there is some kind of threat or some kind of unknown aspect out there that needs to be investigated, dealt with, taken care of in some regard, right? Is there any of one of these that you favor?
Yeah, here's my question. The history of technologically superior cultures, meaning less technologically superior cultures, it never works out well for the less technologically superior culture.
That's right.
So if your planet Earth, if you're the human race, and you are confronted with, you know, a culture that has superior technology, whether it's the remnants of the Nazis or it's humans who, you know, who we are not privy to knowing, whether they come from off planet, you know, whoever it is that has the UFOs, whether they're from planet Earth or they're not, you know, the rest of us have a reason to be worried because they are technologically superior.
Right.
And, yep. and the history is not good. Now, one of the ways I came at this was for many years, I tried to understand financial fraud and related crimes like narcotics trafficking. And again, what I kept running into were people in the military, people in the intelligence community, which, you know, who said, well, you know, stealing drugs was a rotten thing to do, but we had no choice. It was the best of a few bad alternatives. So clearly the U.S. military and the intelligence agencies at the highest levels at the end of World War II made a command decision that they were going to open the American markets to drugs. Now, they had watched, you know, the Navy had teamed up with the Italian mafia to land in Sicily. We saw a lot of the Navy and intelligence agencies over in Asia watching Chiang Kai-shek support financing his armies with drugs. So the relationship between financing military and drugs is sort of a tax that is easier on a population than an overt tax has been going on for centuries. This is nothing new. At the same time, as you listen to them arguing that it was the most humane of all the options to open the American country up to drugs and basically target million of American children with drugs as something that was acceptable given the alternatives, you think, why?
Yeah.
You know, why would, because if you look at the coordination that was required to do the kind of drug dealing and financial fraud, you're talking about, you know, secret society and other leadership in every community in America, all 3,100 counties, doing this as a business, day in, day out. And the question is why? What was so important? Why was it so important to generate trillions of dollars of tax, and where did that money go? And that's the big mystery. And I don't think we can shift as a society to the next level until we face and answer those questions.
And the prospect of trying to, as an opposite idea here, to amass the collected efforts of a, I guess, freaked out mankind at that point to actually reveal some of this information to make us step up to the plate and pull together and contribute and actually make it happen, that was just never an option. It wouldn't work, perhaps. That was never on the table, I guess.
Well, I think it was on the table. I was a partner of a firm in New York called Dillon Reed. And, you know, every time I would go up to the partners' dining rooms to have lunch, I'd look at an oil painting of James Forrestal, who had been a partner at Dillon Reed, and then became the first, he was Secretary of the Navy, and then became the first Secretary of Defense, and then was said to commit suicide after he was fired by Truman. And there's much controversy over what happened in the death. What many people believe is that he argued to bring transparency to the black budget and not create this giant secret national security state, and was murdered as a result. You know, and I very much, if you look at the evidence, it looks to me like he was assassinated, is my guess. So, you know, on that story, but you had at the time of the 47 and the 49 Act, you had a whole group of people who argued for transparency. I think Forrestal was clearly one of them. I think Kennedy was one. So I think Eisenhower was, you know, I don't see evidence that he argued for transparency, but you could see he was getting increasingly frustrated with the way the secret bureaucracy was going, you know, was going. And I think that's what his speech to America was all about, with the, you know, beware the military industrial complex. So I think we've had many people try and bring transparency to this and argue for disclosure. And of course, the challenge to you and I have looking inside of it is, if you don't know what, you know, what the insiders know, you can't possibly understand, you know, what it looks like from their point of view.
Yeah, I see. Well, that's very, very interesting. Let's pick this up here in a little bit. We'll take a break here in a few minutes, Catherine. But Let's give out some more details here. First of all, of course, of your website, what some of the things that you have to offer on there, and then we can give out some more details about the upcoming conference here as well. Then again, dates June 28th, 29th in San Mateo, California, and it's going to be, I think at this point, we have seven or eight speakers there, and of course, you can check it out at secretspaceprogram.org. We're going to have that linked and a little banner up on that page as well, but yeah, give us some details on your end there, Catherine, as well, and if you want to, what you're going to be speaking about as well.
Sure. My website is Soleri.com. I publish the Soleri Report, and we publish podcasts once a week, an interview oftentimes related to your money, your assets. Our tagline is building wealth in changing times. And then I also do every week, but the last week of the month, a roundup called Money in Markets. And we also, one of our great beliefs is we think it's a lot easier to understand the world around you by watching movies. So every week we do Let's Go to the Movies and try and explain to you the best movies and documentaries that you can use to kind of understand what's going around. But you can also check out our blog. We have lots of great resources for free as well, Soleri.com. And I'm going to be speaking about the black budget and what it means to every one of us. I want the audience, and I should mention we'll be, you don't have to come to San Mateo. You can get a ticket so that you can stream the whole conference from where you are. I'll be talking about how to see the black budget and its impact on you every day, and why it's important to you and to the general economy around you, and what that might mean going forward.
All right, very good. I'm going to be there hosting the conference also, by the way, so that'll be a lot of fun. Again, the website, secretspaceprogram.org, check it out. And then we have Catherine's website, Soleri.com. All the links up on redicecreations.com. Check it out from there. Stay with us, Catherine. We'll be right back after a short break.